You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Members of several anti-war groups converged on Bechtel's corporate headquarters in downtown San Francisco this morning to protest the engineering and construction firm's $680 million contract to restore infrastructure in Iraq. Police arrested a total of about 45 demonstrators over the course of the day for engaging in civil disobedience. From Pacifica Station KPFA in Berkeley, California, Tori Taylor reports.
The rally began at 7 a.m. and is scheduled to last throughout the day. Officially sponsored by the groups CorpWatch, Global Exchange, and Public Citizen, members of several other activist organizations also came to protest Bechtel's role in rebuilding Iraq. John Gibler is an organizer with Public Citizen and is one of the authors of a report released today titled Bechtel, Profiting from Destruction, Why the Corporate Invasion of Iraq Must Be Stopped. The report provides a history of Bechtel projects around the world and claims a track record of environmental destruction and financial mismanagement. One of the main complaints is a perceived lack of transparency, both in the bidding process for the contract and its details.
This all happened, you know, behind closed doors, and still there's very little public oversight of what's in fact going on. So it's the corporate culture of sending people over to do this work who have a history, pronounced history, of profiting at public expense. So we have a grave concern that Bechtel's more interested in making huge profits than they are in doing immediate, urgent public humanitarian works.
Gibler says making the contract public would help to offset public suspicion that Bechtel is concerned solely with profiting from the war through large repair contracts. But John Marshall, spokesman for Bechtel, says the company has no plans to publish a contract. He says the contract contains privileged information that they don't want to share with competitors regarding minimizing costs while still addressing complex technical issues. And he says accusations of war profiteering are examples of ill-founded, angry rhetoric.
That's an outrageous accusation, and they know it. Bechtel has taken no position for or against the war. And frankly, the size of the contract, the idea that Bechtel would promote war in order to get a contract of this magnitude, we have contracts in the Middle East now that are two and three times this size. War is bad for business because it depresses business investment. It creates risk. People and governments don't invest in infrastructure when there's a threat of war. So the claim is both wrong and silly.
In response to the report released today, Marshall says the allegations of human rights and environmental abuses against Bechtel are unfounded, exaggerated, and inaccurate. And he maintains that Bechtel is doing valuable work to help repair and rebuild much of Iraq's infrastructure, from ports, roads, and airports to schools, hospitals, and water treatment plants. Public Citizen's Gibler agrees that Iraq needs to be redeveloped as soon as possible. But he says localization and the utilization of Iraqi input at all levels of the reconstruction, including at the very top, such as in Bechtel's role, should be the guiding principle of rebuilding the country.
We need to keep two principal things in focus. The people of Iraq first, and you know, our culture of corporate accountability second. I mean, we need to have urgent public works constructed in Iraq. And it would be great if there were, you know, a huge construction company with an amazing track record of corporate social responsibility who could whisk over there and do an excellent, clean job with meaningful local participation. But when we shift to the other main issue, that of corporate accountability, we see that the Bechtel Corporation is, in effect, not that corporation and more the opposite.
The protesters managed to block the main entrance to Bechtel's headquarters for about 20 minutes, but were not able to completely shut down the company's operations. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Tori Taylor in San Francisco.
Chairperson of the board is not digging for roots in the shadows. There's no dying of hunger stare in eyes of Chief Executive Officer of Petroleum. Somebody else is sinking into spring freeze of the soil. Somebody else is evaporating in dry wind of the famine. There's no severe drought in mouth of Senior Vice President of Funding Services. No military contractor is sitting in heat of a disappearing lake. No up in kidneys of a minister of defense. Undersecretary of Interior is not writing distress signals on toilet walls. Do you see a refugee camp cooped up in head of vice president of municipal bonds?
Though the military phase of the Iraq War is now officially over and the U.S. is focusing its military and political influence on other countries such as Syria, Iran, and North Korea, the humanitarian group Voices in the Wilderness plans to ensure that Iraq stays in the spotlight. Earlier today, Peace Watch spoke with Kathy Kelly, co-founder of the Chicago-based Grassroots Campaign, about a series of actions and events her group is planning over the next several months and why she thinks it's important to keep the focus on Iraq.
Well, it certainly is interconnected, Verna, with the concerns for other countries. We think that one of the ways to prevent a next war, should the Bush administration decide to go toward a military attack against one of the other countries in the axis of evil, so-called, or against Syria, is to effectively counter the propaganda that has surrounded this war, to tell the truth about this war. And we sense that many people in the United States are vulnerable to thinking, well, okay, maybe weapons of mass destruction weren't found, but hey, it was important to get rid of Saddam Hussein, and that's been done, and let's just go on to the next subject, change the channel, change the subject. And we don't find that to be an adequate appraisal or any kind of a compassionate look at what actually happened in Iraq.
Aside from the fact that they have not found any weapons of mass destruction to date, what other half-truths or information do you want to keep under the sunlight of public scrutiny with regard to Iraq?
Well, we want people who felt that the war was wrongful in the first place to be bolstered in their sense that they were right in the first place, that that war was unjust, illegal, immoral, counterproductive, and that it could have been avoided. We also want people to understand that jubilation and thanksgiving were not the final word. Certainly there was relief felt when Saddam Hussein and his regime were gone. There was a huge sense of relief, but people hardly had a sense of exhaling when they began to realize that they faced an enormous set of troubles, some of them as lethal as what they faced before, because still people don't have clean water. Sometimes they've only got 2 hours of electricity in a lot of the outlying areas beyond Baghdad, and even in Baghdad, electricity is by no means fully restored. People don't experience safety going out at night, and sometimes not even in the daytime. You've got so many thousands of people that were released from jail by Saddam Hussein, maybe because he wanted to prevent an insurrection, but nevertheless, they're out of work, at home, and with a gun. You've got a huge number of military people released from the army, out of work, and with guns. You've got a situation wherein people don't have purchasing power. They're nervous about how long food will hold out. They still don't have any kind of process by which to develop some kind of suitable system of governance. There's no guarantee that the United States is really going to secure anything other than U.S. military and political and economic interests. And in that situation of grave uncertainty, there are also outbreaks of cholera happening in Basra and Hilla, and in parts of Baghdad, the hospitals are filled with tiny children coming with dysentery, diarrhea, and malnutrition. Coupled with that means that there could be yet another wave of thousands of deaths of children.
We're also hearing reports that with respect to the criminal atmosphere that seems to be prevailing there in Iraq, that women, young women, girls are being abducted and sexually assaulted at random.
Well, certainly we ourselves know of parents who take their children and young women to school and wait outside of the schools for them to be released and then go back home with them. And that kind of fright and uncertainty was never so pervasive, so widespread before. And so Iraqis that we know of are adjusting themselves to new realities wherein people who never, ever wanted to pick up a gun. I know a couple of guys who said they paid 2 million Iraqi dinar to get out of serving in the military, but now feel like they have to have a gun in hand and take shifts all night long trying to protect their homes. So we wouldn't want to create the impression that Iraqi people are wild and ungovernable, But this can be predicted. When there's a social volcano that is predictably ready to erupt after people have been subjected to over 12 years of abject poverty, to huge frustration, to terrible humiliation, surely you can expect an outbreak of rage. And when people don't have a sense of security, they're going to try to take from their neighbors when they don't see another way to feed their own families.
What specific types of actions is Voices in the Wilderness planning to try and keep this spotlight on Iraq?
Well, we're certainly wanting to give as much support as we possibly can to our team that's in Baghdad, and they'll be sending back regular reports as best they can. It's difficult when there isn't electricity or phone service available. And then we're also going to be sponsoring a Wheels of Justice bus tour, re-outfitting a bus that we've had a good measure of success with in the past that can go right up to university quadrangles, to town squares, and we think get beyond the choir, get a message out to people that will help them to continue to focus on cares and concerns about Iraqi people. We want to have packets available to people in small towns and cities across the country so that they can do something reminiscent of Mississippi summer. A lot of your listeners, Verna, would remember or would have heard about a time when people who were among the most humiliated and dispossessed in this country's history, sharecroppers from the Deep South, went and, with accompaniment from people who came in from other parts of the country, door-to-door canvassed their neighbors, went out to every possible public event, and eventually changed public opinion under really extremely difficult circumstances with regard to segregation and voting rights. Well, we want to propose Iraq Summer and have people going out in their communities to public places, to religious gatherings, to social events, and making available to people the kinds of talking points that we think are so important to counteract the propaganda that has surrounded this war. And these are talking points that have to do with United Nations statements about current conditions in Iraq, mm-hmm. responsibilities of the U.S. under the laws of that would affect an occupying power, realities about an unexploded ordnance that is littering Iraq right now and can still maim and kill many people, especially children are vulnerable. And we want to continue to ask the questions that we think are moral questions. Where are the weapons of mass destruction? What verifiable connection existed between Iraq and al-Qaeda? And if there's no evidence for those ostensible reasons that the U.S. gave for attacking Iraq, then what are the real reasons?
And so who will be on this bus?
Well, we're certainly gratified to have a huge number of volunteers who wanted to become involved with these kinds of projects. We're also very fortunate to have 140 people that participated in the Iraq peace team. And these are people, many of them, who took considerable risks to go over to Iraq in a very dangerous time. And they're impassioned. They want to come back and speak about what they saw and heard. But we're really hoping that some of your listeners might want to become involved in this and would be willing to get in touch with us about it.
And where should they contact you?
They could write to us at info@vitw.org. And as soon as we have a schedule for the bus, we'll definitely make that available. And this time, calling it the Wheels of Justice bus tour, we are also very cognizant that the United States may, in fact, be planning to attack another country, perhaps before the next election, maybe more likely after it. But we have to start now to orientate ourselves toward better understanding of the cares and concerns of people in Iran, along with their very complex history, likewise North and South Korea, and certainly with regard to Syria.
Voices in the Wilderness has lobbied for years, Kathy Kelly, to get economic sanctions lifted in Iraq. Now that they are lifted, is that a victory or no? What's next?
The end of campaigning since 1996 to have the sanctions lifted was bittersweet. Of course, we want to see Iraq's schools and clinics and hospitals and neighborhoods benefit from the lifting of the economic sanctions. We want to see people able to import the equipment they need to rehabilitate this devastated and debilitated infrastructure. We want to see people get purchasing power in their pockets. But we never, ever wanted to see this happen in a fashion such that the United States, with control over humanitarian assistance to Iraq can now also invoke the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank to share in that control. You know, they call them structural adjustment programs, will be slapped on Iraq, and that Iraq will have to ultimately tax its own people and cut back on social services in order to be able to pay back loans that will be made available in order to afford very crucially needed development. So it doesn't seem to us that it's a time to, you know, throw our hats in the air and say, huzzah, look what's happened. It was very, very curious to read Mr. Bush saying that no country in the world could, with any kind of conscience, frustrate the aspirations of Iraqi people at this point, because we think that for 13 years, people in governing spots in the United States had no problem whatsoever frustrating the aspirations of people simply to keep their children alive.
Kathy Kelly is the co-founder of Voices in the Wilderness. She's traveled to Iraq dozens of times since the first Gulf War to deliver food and humanitarian aid. More recently, she and other members of the Iraq peace team lived in Baghdad during the U.S.-UK bombing. Voices in the Wilderness isn't the only activist group looking ahead and planning its next steps. Last weekend, hundreds of people gathered at a teach-in here in the nation's capital, sponsored by United for Peace and Justice. Among the speakers who addressed the topic of Iraq, preemptive war, and democracy was former Georgia Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, who discussed the domestic consequences of the Iraq War and encouraged the participants to continue their anti-war efforts.
Never before in the history of our republic have we, the citizens, been met with so many challenges from our leaders. President Bush proclaimed himself the president who would leave no child behind. Yet millions of our children go hungry every night. And poverty, lack of health insurance, shortages of child care assistance, deficits in reading, writing, and math, high school dropouts all confront too many children and their parents today. When George Bush was sworn in, our country had a surplus, but now that surplus has been frittered away. And those whose mantra used to be fiscal responsibility, balance the budget, are silent as the administration owns up to its own report that places future U.S. budget deficits at more than $44 trillion. In its quest for more butter, our president proposed tax cuts that would return more to the five Walton siblings who inherited Walmart than to the nearly 1 million employees of Walmart. And now the administration denies tax cuts to minimum wage working families. Meanwhile, corporate criminals and tax cheats are getting millions in contracts from this administration. WorldCom and DynCorp got no-bid contracts in Iraq. And just since March 2002, Halliburton has been given $530 million for work in Afghanistan and Iraq. This doesn't count the $70 million contract to repair Iraqi oil wells, nor does it count the $30 million contract for constructing U.S. terror camps at Guantanamo Bay. Our school children are about to be fed irradiated hamburger in the school lunch program, and I wonder who's going to get that contract. In its quest for more guns, we face steep heights in defense spending, even though the Pentagon admits that it lost $2.3 trillion. The Bush administration seems to be following a militaristic global blueprint that plans for a new American century. All Americans are being asked to sacrifice so that a few can get butter while the masses get guns. Presidents from George Washington to Dwight Eisenhower have warned us against state militarism and weapons manufacturers. Our interest, guided by justice, is what George Washington said. When John Kennedy was confronted with the Cuban Missile Crisis and the men in his Pentagon who wanted to launch a preemptive strike against Cuba, Bobby Kennedy said, "That's a Pearl Harbor in reverse. For 175 years, We have not been that kind of country. JFK avoided that war and instead set about to make the world safe for diversity. JFK rejected Pax Americana. The brother who advised him against that war was also cut down while campaigning for the presidency. We later learned that Bobby was considering Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to be his running mate. Imagine the America we might have today with real men of peace at our helm. Instead, we're confronted with an administration that arrived at the White House by not counting our votes and that projects 60 countries as possible targets for war. This administration proposes to increase defense spending, develop usable nuclear weapons, increase military personnel without a fair draft, control space and cyberspace. Some have even suggested that genotype-specific biowarfare could become a politically useful tool. Now, where I come from, as an African American, I think of Paul Robeson and the MKUltra program. I think of the Tuskegee study, where for 40 years, black men went to their government doctors thinking they were being treated and they were being studied. Instead of pursuing the peace agenda of the Clinton administration, this administration has managed to transform us from a country that pursued peace in Kashmir, the Middle East, Northern Ireland, and North Korea, to one that has now become a power ranger on patrol in countries all over the planet. Our former CIA director, James Woolsey, says we're now engaged in World War IV, and that's why we're here today. What sense does it make for America to win any war when it's lost its soul? Two more black people are being mourned in New York City this weekend, victims of the New York City Police Department, one a grandmotherly woman, the other an unarmed black man. We need new leadership. This administration put our armed forces in harm's way, citing faulty evidence. Before the war, Dick Cheney announced that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Ari Fleischer told us, quote, "We know for a fact that weapons are there." Just a few weeks ago, Colin Powell told us, quote, "I'm absolutely sure that there are weapons of mass destruction there, and evidence will be forthcoming." Then the backtracking began. Condoleezza Rice announced that U.S. officials never expected to, quote, "open garages and find weapons of mass destruction." Then 4 days ago, Donald Rumsfeld told the Council on Foreign Relations, "They may have had time to destroy them, and I don't know the answer." 3 days ago, Paul Wolfowitz, in a Vanity Fair interview, said that the administration settled on weapons of mass destruction as a justification for invading Iraq because it was the one reason that everybody could agree on. And then yesterday, Lieutenant General James Conway said he's surprised. He said, "We've been to virtually every ammunition supply point between the Kuwaiti border and Baghdad, but they're simply not there." We care about health care, education, America's children, employment, transportation, veterans, the glass ceiling, affirmative action, urban sprawl, air quality, race relations, drug abuse, poverty, social justice, the death penalty, U.S. standing in the world. We care about war, and we care about peace. But sadly, a new breed of leader has invaded Washington, D.C., and they don't give a darn about the things we care about. If this administration has its way, we won't know any of George Bush's secrets. The White House will be able to shut down information to all of us just as easily as it shut down this year's Easter egg hunt. But we must remember, it wasn't always this way. There was a brighter time for America when we were respected around the world and our leaders truly cared about each and every one of us. Bobby Kennedy just happened to be with Black America at the time of the announcement of Dr. King's death. At that moment, unscripted and unrehearsed, Bobby said, "What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence or lawlessness, but love and wisdom and compassion toward one another and a feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black. We can do well in this country. We will have difficult times. We've had difficult times. We will not have difficult times. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness. It is not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of white people and the vast majority of black people in this country want to live together, want to improve the quality of life, and want justice for all human beings who abide in our land. Let us dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle life of this world. In the end, we can lament together the state of our beloved America, or we can put our bodies on the gears and wheels and levers of the machinery that runs this country and to what it's becoming, and we can stop it. We can stop this machine and make gentle the life of this world."
Cynthia McKinney was the first African-American woman from Georgia elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. She was re-elected 5 times, where she was a strong advocate of peace, demilitarization, and human rights. McKinney spoke at last weekend's teach-in here in the nation's capital on Iraq, preemptive war, and democracy. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Otto Hammond of KPFA, Pete Weiss, Benta Berkland, Aaron Glantz, Eileen Alfandary, Jade Paget-Seekins, and T from the Pattersons, taking the train to Tibet. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producers, Matt Bradley and Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting their website at pacificaarchives.org or calling 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. If you'd like to support Peace Watch, we urge you to make a pledge through our secure online website at pacifica.org, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send your feedback to us at peacewatch@pacifica.org. You can also visit webactive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.